Hi, I'm Sunni Khalid, an editor in the KALW newsroom. At KALW, we make radio by the Bay, for the Bay, and just a few times a year we ask for your support. We share news that tells the stories of communities that make the Bay Area such a unique place. You can contribute online at KALW.org. Click, donate, and thank you.
KALW.
So it's all about the timing and the coordination and the strength and how hard or softly you pull or how hard or softly you push the pedal.
Today we're going to meet people who carry on a tradition that's been going on in San Francisco for almost 200 years.
Technically, learning the bells has been really difficult because it's not like an acoustic guitar where you can just take it into your bedroom and play.
The Trinity Church Bell Ringers. Then a play about three black men on a train ride in the 1940s.
They come back from the war, now they go to move up to Chicago and St. Louis and Baltimore. And then he says, but most of them are better off with the devil they know.
That's coming up. I'm Sunni Khalid, in for Hanan Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Today, we're starting our show with a new series introducing you to people who create, celebrate, and preserve cultures from around the Bay Area.
I was very much fascinated by bells and lights and whistles.
It's my role to learn it well and protect it and keep it.
Alors, je vais faire l'explication en anglais. Soyez tolérants.
Just the energy and the drive that they have, like the future is looking fucking golden.
In this one, we're going to the corner of Green and Van Ness. Most days, it sounds like any other place in San Francisco. Cars, joggers, the occasional barking dog. But if you're there on Sunday mornings, you'll hear something magical. Those are the bells of Holy Trinity Cathedral, some of the only remaining hand-rung church bells in San Francisco. And if you look up into the bell tower, you might see one of the people that rings them. This is the first in our series, Culture Keepers, celebrating the communities of the Bay Area. KALW's Quinn Nelson introduces us to the bell ringers of Holy Trinity.
I'm in my Sunday best, walking through Russian Hill, when I see a building that looks like it came from a different world. It has bright blue domes, gold spires, and delicately arched windows. That's where I meet this guy.
Hello, my name is Emmanuel Blagoe Manasievich, but you can call me Manny for short, because that's a very long name. And I am a bell ringer at Holy Trinity Cathedral.
I'm here to shadow Manny as he prepares to ring Holy Trinity's seven bells. As soon as we open the wooden doors of the church, the sounds of the city fade away and everything gets super quiet. The church is hushed, but alive with pre-service bustling and rustling. Manny lowers his voice to a whisper to ask for the keys to the bell tower.
Good morning.
Our next stop is a chest of drawers on the church's second floor, where Manny takes out two pairs of huge orange and black headphones, the kind you would find at a construction site. Then we continue our climb to the bell tower. Manny starts by sounding the largest of the bells, which weighs almost 3 tons. When it rings, I can feel the vibrations in my bones. That bell is almost 2 centuries old, but Holy Trinity itself is even older. The church was founded in 1857, making it one of the first Orthodox churches in the United States. So now, in 2023, Holy Trinity's bell ringers are literally recreating the sound of the past.
Every liturgy will start with a specific bell ringing called the Blagovest. In old church Slavonic translates to something akin to a good word or good news going out. So basically that's just going to be a slow tolling of the large bell probably once a minute.
Holy Trinity may be old, but its bell ringers are no Luddites. Manny says he usually finishes up the Blagovest at 9:30, or when he gets a text message from the priest that it's time to start the festal peal. This ringing is lighter, more joyful. The smaller bells sound like falsettos and sopranos compared to the larger bell's baritone. I've never met a kid who wants to be a bell ringer when they grow up. But for Manny, ringing these bells at this church almost feels preordained.
So my parents were immigrants from Romania who came over in the late 70s. Very long story outside the scope of this interview, but they ended up in San Francisco in the late 70s. And being of Romanian heritage, they were both born and raised Eastern Orthodox.
Manny's parents discovered Holy Trinity when they moved into the neighborhood. They got married at the church, and a few years later, they decided to baptize Manny there.
I was very much fascinated by bells and lights and whistles and everything as a kid, and these church bells were extra special.
So special, in fact, that he couldn't help but invent his own DIY version.
I would take down all the pots and pans from the kitchen cabinets, lay them upside down on the kitchen table, grab some wooden spoons, and then start banging on them, emulating the sound of those church bells as I remembered them.
Manny has long since graduated from pots and pans. Holy Trinity's former choir director and bell ringer was the first person to show him the ropes. For the past 10 years, he's been ringing the real thing. The sound of the bells sticks out amid the car horns and shuffling feet, like a strange interlude in the song of San Francisco.
Many times I will observe from the bell tower people stopping on the street to look up the bells. Sometimes I'm just doing the slow single bell toll leading up to the liturgy, so people might stop and pause, they might take a picture.
Like these three men I meet on the sidewalk.
This is Serbian.
Or Armenian. Or Russian.
It's pure Russian.
Why is it Russian? Well, Serbia is not Russia.
I thought it was Serbian. But
they hate
I
the
must
Russians. Oh, it's
okay.
Russian. Yeah, look at the script. It's Russian script.
Can I ask why you are
Cyrillic.
Curious about this church?
Huh?
Why are you all so curious about
it? Got
church?
Burned one time. It
well,
got
we heard the chimes from the bell. And I said it seems a little out of tune.
Yeah. The bell was good. I thought I liked the sound of the bells. Did you?
No, I didn't like it.
You did not
that
like
that
it?
Much. No.
Why not?
Because I've heard many better.
If you also think the bells sound a bit inharmonious, Manny says that's actually by design.
In the Western tradition, bells are tuned to specific notes. So when you think of European city with a church bell, the bells will play certain melodies at different times of days, and striking one bell will play a certain note. So this bell is a C, that bell is a B, and so on and so forth. But in the Russian tradition, basically once a bell is cast, that is the tone, the note it has for life. So instead of playing melodies, they're treated as a percussion instrument in which the different bells have a series of overlaid rhythms and pattern played, depending on, of course, how many bells there are and the skill of the bell ringer.
That was Konstantin Stade ringing Holy Trinity's bells. He's kind of a big deal in the world of Orthodox bells, and he helped Holy Trinity change their bells to a more traditional setup in 2018. In case you couldn't already tell from Konstantin's ringing, bell ringing is a skill. You might be picturing somebody hitting a bell with a stick, but what Manny and other bell ringers do looks more like an intricate dance.
So the way the bells are configured is that the bells themselves are fixed, and it's only the clapper inside the bell that moves to strike. And those clappers are controlled by the cords of varying lengths and tensions and sizes.
Like any dance, bell ringing engages the whole body. Many's left hand holds three different chords. These chords are knotted together at the end, and they move the clappers of the three smallest bells. His right palm controls four chords, and at his feet are two pedals, which ring the largest and second largest bells.
Basically, the bell, in a way, sort of becomes an extension of your limbs, because you are, through your movement, that's what makes it sound. So it's all about the timing and the coordination and the strength and how hard or softly you pull or how hard or softly you push the pedal. And to be honest, I'm still learning because it is very nuanced.
These bells are heavy. They're sturdy and tangible. But there's something undeniably fragile in what Manny does. Hand-rung bells are rare these days. Other churches have turned to automation or use pre-recorded bell sounds. But Manny's not worried.
I don't think this tradition is going anywhere because it's been a part of this parish since it was in existence for the last 155 years.
In fact, five of its seven bells, including the biggest one, were a gift to the church by Tsar Alexander III, who donated the bells in 1888. And the bells have seen more than just Russian history. They were removed from the church before the earthquake and fire that destroyed most of San Francisco in 1906. When the original church burned, the bells survived.
So the bells will continue ringing.
And to make sure they keep ringing, Manny is teaching others, like Bonnie Cherry.
Technically, learning the bells has been really, really difficult because it's not like an acoustic guitar where you can just take it into your bedroom and play and not bother anybody. If you practice the bells too much, you get like the cops showing up, you know, with complaints.
But even though bell ringing comes with inconveniences, it might be the perfect type of music for Bonnie to learn.
So I had a tumor near my brainstem, and it paralyzed my vocal cords, and it caused me to lose most of my hearing.
But Bonnie still experiences sound.
Sound is a thing, and every body receives it, even if it receives it in a different way. Like, you can't close your eyes to sound.
She feels it in her body as waves and vibrations. She says that even if she loses her hearing and her voice completely,
I feel like I will still be able to, like, go up that bell tower, you know, and send my heart out in a thousand directions. It feels like ringing the bells feels, when I do it, it feels like my soul is singing.
That's why it's so important to her that Holy Trinity's bells keep ringing.
I think that anybody who learns a liturgical art becomes responsible for protecting that art and for teaching another person. Like, it's my role to learn it well and protect it and keep it as a thing that not a lot of people do.
When I asked Bonnie if she had anyone in mind to teach bell ringing to, she replied immediately, her daughter.
She'll be so much better than me at it. So after I get good at it and after she's old enough that I can, like, trust her to protect her ears, she's going to learn too.
But bell ringing is also more than a tradition to be passed on or a unique sound. Like all music, it's about giving the world a piece of yourself. To hear Bonnie ring the bells is to hear her heart.
Like I said, I'm ringing after the service is over usually. And that's when fewer people in our parish are actually listening. They're going downstairs for coffee and they're shaking hands and stuff like that. And so after the service, you know, praying is done. We're all in communion. We've lifted up our hearts. And I'm so, like, satisfied. I feel like my heart is just bursting with gratitude and love. And going up to the bell tower, it's like I get to send, like, my full bursting heart out into a thousand directions.
If you happen to be on the sidewalk in Russian Hill on a Sunday and can hear Holy Trinity's bells in person, you'll notice that the actual peals only last for a couple of minutes, unless it's a major holiday. But long after the last bell had sounded, I could feel a deep vibration, the noise of the city seeps back in. The cars, the joggers, the occasional barking dog. But if you listen closely, there's still a gentle hum. It's a hum that will last for a while. In San Francisco, I'm Quinn Nelson for Cross Currents.
Thanks, Quinn. That was the first story in our new series, Culture Keepers, celebrating the communities of the Bay Area. Listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Suni Khalid in for Hana Baba. The play Train Stories takes audiences on a ride back in time to 1948. It was post-World War II and before the Civil Rights Movement. In the play, three black men of different backgrounds are leaving the South by train for a better life. They're trying to figure out where they stand in America. KALW's Danae Darden spoke with longtime artist and actor Wayne Harris, who wrote Train Stories.
You've done so much around the Bay Area, so much artistry and performances, and your latest play, Train Stories, takes place in 1948.
Well, Danae, when I first started working on this piece, I was kind of doing some research around my father's job on the railroad. And he, like many black folks during that time, was a part of the Great Migration. He and my mother met in Little Rock, Arkansas. And he, like many men of that time, went off to war. And when he came back, they wanted, like so many others, wanted to leave the South. And as I was kind of looking back on his career, I was just really fascinated with that time period, that post-Second World War, pre-Civil Rights era. And, you know, once again, it was kind of a moment of hopefulness for black folks in America. You know, I think things were being desegregated. The armed forces had been desegregated, and there was litigation going through the courts that was allowing for more educational opportunities. And, you know, kind of like those first 12 years, you know, of Reconstruction. Wow, where can we go from here? You know, like one of the characters in the play says, you know, a lot of them old boys, you know, they come back from the war, and now they're going to move up to Chicago and St. Louis and Baltimore, you know, to get away from the South. And then he says, but most of them are better off with the devil they know.
That line from your play says a lot, because yeah, there were people who left the South and they went to other cities and they were like, this is not what we thought it was all cracked up to be.
And in surprising ways, you know, when you look at so many of, you know, our grandfathers and mothers, for that matter, going from a kind of a rural mindset, you know, to urban reality. It really shows that just the idea of so much promise, a time with so much promise, and then the harsh realities. You know, in some ways, a lot of people feel that, you know, the South kind of looked straight at its drama, its racism, you know. I mean, you knew where you stood in Mississippi. It wasn't good, but you knew where you stood.
You know, so what were some of the challenges that people faced when they left the South? I'm thinking of they left that big, beautiful land to come live in an apartment. The weather, it was cold in Chicago and those kind of places. Cold in St. Louis, where you're originally from.
You mentioned it. Even things like all of a sudden you're living, you know, on the 12th floor, you know, of one of the projects in St. Louis. You're used to having land and used to having kind of more of a broader landscape. And now you're kind of in these boxes. And I think it's the boxes are metaphorical as well in terms of what you're locked into, the redlining that was going on during the time and creating these ghettos in the various cities, or the job prospects that you had as a Black man or woman at that time. I was reading a little bit of The Warmth of Other Suns, this beautiful book. And yes, one of the quotes from that, it says, "It occurred to me that no matter where I lived, geography could not save me." That speaks so clearly to me that the ramifications of slavery and the deconstruction of the Black family lingers no matter where you are. Me here in San Leandro, California, cannot get away from the legacy of slavery.
My grandparents, they migrated from Gilmer, Texas, and Biloxi, Mississippi, and Edwards, Mississippi. So I'm grateful for them. I want to talk about some these characters. You play a man named Elder Brown. There's Tyrone Little, played by Tony Cyprian. John Henry, played by Kirk Waller. So Elder Brown, Tyrone Little, John Henry, briefly tell us about these men that are these characters in your play.
Well, you know, all three of the characters are connected to the railroad in one way or the other. John Henry is a dining room porter. John Henry, as his namesake, you know, might infer, is a very righteous man. He was a follower at one point of Marcus Garvey. And that plays a strategic role in the play. But he's a righteous, upstanding brother who is trying to share a Black consciousness with those that are around him. One of the other characters, Tyrone Little, his relationship to the train is a little different. He is a pimp.
What?
And, oh, yeah. Tyrone Little is a pimp. But he's a businessman. He would tell you he's a businessman. And part of that business is riding the rail lines from town to town, picking up his money. He's an interesting character. Elder Brown.
And that's who you play, Elder Brown.
I get to play Elder Brown. And Elder Brown is a retired railroad worker. He was what they used to call, maybe they still do, Gandhi dancers. And the Gandhi dancers were the guys that would straighten the track or lay track. And you've seen, no doubt, pictures of these men hammering the spikes into the tracks. Mm-hmm. Or straightening the tracks. You know, the tracks would start to shift at times. So they always had these crew of men that, and this was some hard work, Janae. This is,
yeah, that's what I was thinking. I said, that's hard work, yes.
And he was a caller. And the caller's job is to keep those men coordinated, you know. So you would hear his job would be to sing so that they would stay in rhythm. And he would keep them moving, you know. "I don't know, but I believe I will make my home in Jacksonville. Oh, boy, throw it over. Oh, boy, throw it over." You know, and he keep the men working. And he's since retired. But he still looks at life and how to deal with life the same way he dealt with those work crew.
Wow, they all have such interesting backgrounds. What message do you hope audiences receive from this production about Black men?
Well, first of all, that we're not a monolith. That the paths that Black men have taken have been in some ways forced on us, but in other ways forged in a creative, powerful way by us. And that, you know, those stories are complicated, as all stories are. But in particular, I would like for young men, young Black men, to see and hear these storytellers share their stories. Because the more you are in touch with your history, the more you understand the paths that have been set to come to this moment in time, the better prepared you are for that next step.
That was San Leandro actor Wayne Harris speaking with KALW's Janae Darden. Watch Wayne perform in the play Train Stories at the Marsh in Berkeley from September 8th to the 29th. This interview was co-produced by Porfirio Rangel. For Cross Currents, I'm Suni Khalid.